This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we aim to vaccinate 1.6 million people in 8 localities in the 2 states which have confirmed cholera cases.
That's WHO spokesman Tariq Yasirvich on efforts to fight the cholera outbreak in Sudan. Details coming up also. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is making a state visit to South Africa, and a top UN official is in Djibouti to draw attention to the growing humanitarian crisis in the Horn of Africa. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is making a state visit to South Africa weeks after deadly mob violence against Nigerian nationals living in South Africa. Buhari and South African President Cyril Ramaphosa pledged today to take concrete measures to stem future outbreaks of xenophobic violence. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Nigeria's president described his Thursday meeting with his South African counterpart as a tête-à-tête, a polite contrast to the head-on anti-immigrant violence that swept South Africa last month, resulting in the deaths of at least 12 people. The violence prompted Nigeria to repatriate hundreds of citizens, and for President Buhari to declare, after a private meeting with President Ramaphosa, that the two countries would do more to stop future bloodshed.
We have decided to work and take concrete measures together to prevent the reoccurrence of such unacceptable incidents in the future.
Ramaphosa elaborated.
We've agreed that we are going to set up mechanisms between our two countries. Early warning mechanisms will be set up so that once we see that there's restiveness, we will be able to inform one another, to find ways and active ways of ensuring that we do not have recurrences. And at the same time, we will cooperate at a number of levels, including at the policing level, including at the intelligence sharing information level.
Analyst Ryan Cummings, who heads the political and security risk management consultancy Signal Risk, said the meeting set an important diplomatic tone.
The key development throughout all of this is that South Africa and Nigeria are continuing to respond to this and other challenges affecting both countries through diplomacy, and that kind of diplomatic engagement is still the order of the day. Not everyone's going to be happy with that. So I think that, you know, even the sense of kind of collaboration between these two countries and between the two governments is an important kind of countermeasure to the, you know, kind of tense relations and nationalism which exists between South Africans and Nigerians at this time.
And as Cummings added, through unity comes strength. The two nations have the largest economies on the African continent and are seeking to boost inter-African trade and cooperation as a way to boost the continent's strength and lessen its dependency on the international community. Ramaphosa made that clear in criticizing the United Nations, whose Permanent Security Council has never included an African member.
We both agree that the UN Security Council architecture, the governance, should be changed. It is not acceptable that the United Nations Security Council is just a club for a few countries and is not representative. So we want representativity. We want Africa to be represented. We want equity. There should be equitable representation on the UN Security Council. We are very clear and we are firm on that.
Buhari's 3-day visit will also include a business forum and a meeting of a binational commission aimed at boosting cooperation between the two countries. He will also meet with Nigerian expatriates in Johannesburg, South Africa's largest city. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
The World Health Organization reports an oral cholera vaccine campaign later this month is only one of a number of actions it will implement to stem a cholera outbreak in Sudan. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Latest reports from Sudan's health ministry put the number of confirmed cholera cases at 215, including 8 deaths. The government declared the cholera outbreak in Blue Nile State on September 8th, with other cases reported from Sinnar State soon after. The World Health Organization warns 6 other states are at risk. WHO spokesman Tarek Jazarovic says past experience shows quick action is needed to contain this deadly disease.
There were cases of cholera and acute watery diarrhea from August 2016 until March 2018 with more than 36,000 cases, and lessons from this outbreak have been incorporated in the response plan that is currently being put in place by the Federal Ministry of Health, WHO, and other partners.
WHO notes that previous outbreak had affected 18 states, leading to the deaths of 823 people, 15% of them children under age 5. It says WHO staff is monitoring water quality at the community level and improving infection prevention measures at health facilities. Jazarovic says WHO, the UN Children's Fund, and partners will launch an oral vaccination campaign in mid-October. He says it will be funded by the Gavi Alliance.
We aim to vaccinate 1.6 million people in 8 localities in the 2 states which have confirmed cholera cases. Again, those are Blue Nile and Sinnar states. The vaccination will be, as in other OCV campaigns, for everyone above age of 1 year and will include lactating and pregnant women.
Jazarovic says cholera vaccines are given in 2 doses, so a second round will follow at a later date. Cholera and other diarrheal diseases are a recurring problem in Sudan because of the country's weak health infrastructure and dilapidated safe water and sewage system. WHO warns these factors heighten the risk of cholera spreading widely unless needed responses are immediately adopted. WHO says it needs $10 to $15 million to contain the current outbreak in the coming 3 to 6 months. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Most Algerian political parties have chosen not to participate in the presidential election scheduled for December 12th. Army Chief of Staff Ahmed Gayed Salah is threatening anyone obstructing this process, calling it the constitutional way out of the political crisis. The list of candidates is becoming clearer after the announcement of politically important figures affiliated with either the army or a wing of the old guards as candidates, including former Prime Minister Ali Benflie and Abdelmajid Tebboune. That goes against the goal of protesters to infuse new blood into the political process. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi asked William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University, whether the army chief can impose his will on the persistent protesters.
Yes, but only if he uses much more violence and much more arbitrary justice. As it's currently going, with some arrests and some prevention and protests, it probably wouldn't be enough to impose his will. But if he chooses to go the way as more harsh leaders of regime have done, it could force their hands. Right now, it seems that the regime is avoiding creating martyrs or high levels of reaction from the protesters, but still imposing a military-led rule of law. And clearly both sides believe they can outlast the other. So the popular movement and most of the parties just want to repeat what happened in July with the stoppage of elections because no one was participating, forcing the regime's hand. But Gayed Salah is attempting to use the army's old playbook going back to the 1960s of imposing its own rules and its own order. And it's not clear yet which way this will go.
The list of candidates for the upcoming presidential elections in Algeria is becoming clearer after the announcement of politically important figures affiliated with either the army or a wing of the old guards. What do you make of that?
It is a small victory for the regime. It means that the army believes it can maintain power and its imposed order if it can establish a civilian leadership that acts as a kind of political facade and facilitator. These candidates probably believe that they have a greater chance of success by teaming up with the military than they would in truly free and fair elections. However, even though people like Ali Benflis do have some credibility going back to the 2014 elections and before, they'll lose a lot of credibility by making this move, and that will probably depress turnout a lot if there are elections.
Army Chief of Staff General Ahmed Qaid Salah said officials from Bouteflika's era were trying to disrupt the election by spreading rumors that the military would side with one of the politicians running for the president. He pledged that the army would not back any candidate in the presidential elections. Would that encourage opponents to participate in the election?
No, because the army backing of candidates, which has happened in every election since independence, was never a formal backing. It was an informal backing. So those that are stating that the army will back this candidate or that are not propagandists. They're simply historians of what happens in every Algerian election. I would think it would take a lot more than that for more opponents to run for president. And now there was an interesting idea that was floated prior to this round of elections when the president was still alive, Bouteflika, but that would have been that the army would have sanctioned two or three candidates and allowed the population to choose among them, giving them a choice rather than just a coronation. But as it stands right now, things haven't even evolved that far. And it is likely if there are elections, the military will back one candidate.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University. He spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 17 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is making a state visit to South Africa weeks after deadly mob violence against Nigerian nationals living in South Africa. The World Health Organization reports a cholera vaccine campaign in Sudan. And most Algerian political parties have chosen not to participate in the presidential election scheduled for December 12th. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In Zimbabwe, the central bank has outlawed the use of foreign currency for local transactions. It has also banned the use of the mobile money transfer system for moving money between agents and individuals. Adigando has the story.
Last week, the government issued a 10-page set of regulations which outlawed the use of foreign currencies for pricing, among other transactions. Earlier this week, the central bank banned the use of foreign currencies by electronic and mobile money providers. The move mainly affected EcoCash, which is owned by the country's largest privately owned telecommunications network, Econet. It launched a court challenge against the ban, and a judgment is set for Friday at the High Court. The government claims that money transfer agents were charging huge percentages for cash withdrawals, thereby fueling the parallel market. The government moves follow the closure of the accounts of companies such as Secunda Holdings, which has been accused of manipulating the currency market. Observers say that the recent government moves are throwing the financial system into disarray and alarming the public, which fears a return to long queues at the bank for hard cash. Zimbabwe's economy, and particularly its currency, has been in a tailspin since 2016, but the downward spiral has been accelerating since October. Observers say things are not getting better. They say the government's latest villain is EcoCash rather than its own and budgeted expenditures and the growth of the money supply from about $10 billion in January to $15 billion in June. Economic analyst Tumsani Sbanda blames the government for failing to evaluate its policies.
When you look at the exchange rate, that the cash exchange rate has remained more stable than the RTGS rate. So obviously there's more value in cash than in RTGS and electronic money, basically EcoCash and so on, which shows that the problem of Zimbabwe is a money supply problem. There's some level of intellectual dishonesty when you look at the reports from the Ministry of Finance where they say they have a budget surplus. You say they have a budget surplus, yet the conditions in the market are reflecting that there's surplus money. It caused the decline in exchange rate and increase in dollars related to money.
Economic analysts maintain that the real challenge for Zimbabwe is the central bank's practices of printing money in the form of treasury bills and unbudgeted expenditures for government programs. Last week, the central bank's deputy governor, Kupukile Mlambo, admitted in a parliamentary portfolio committee meeting that the central bank spent more than US$2.1 billion, which was not approved by parliament and was not part of the 2017-2018 budget. With excess liquidity in the market due to the issuance of treasury bills by the central bank, the room for arbitrage is wide open, analysts say. That is the purchase and sale of securities in different markets in order to profit from differences in prices, as well as the trade in the foreign currencies.
The way they are unraveling is that they lead from one crisis to another. And, you know, when you introduce the local currency, that's fundamental. In the moment, it creates a big arbitrage in the whole economy.
Economic analysts contend that government moves such as criminalizing the use of foreign exchange and the banning of the cash-in and cash-out facilities for the mobile money transfer services within the country is possibly illegal. This given the fact that there have been widespread cash shortages in the country, which the services have been providing through electronic means. The government blames the actions of agents, but economic analysts say the fundamentals of the economy are wrong. Meanwhile, Cassava Smarttech, which runs Econet's EcoCash platform, is taking action. It launched a court appeal against the ban by the central bank, pending the determination of the legality of the central bank's directive. The company says it is responsible for managing a platform of over 10 million users, which was used by just over 6 million people in the last 90 days. According to the court documents, most of these are rural customers who have no access to banking services apart from the EcoCash platform. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
A top UN official is in the country of Djibouti for a three-day visit to draw attention to the growing humanitarian crisis in the Horn of Africa. Ursula Mueller, UN Assistant Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs and Deputy Emergency Relief Coordinator, is appealing for emergency assistance to provide food and medical supplies to thousands of refugees and migrants. From Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
Mueller met yesterday with Djibouti's Prime Minister Abdulkadir Kamil Mohamed. She appealed for much-needed emergency support from the donor community.
The global displacement crisis has a direct impact on Djibouti. The country is now home to more than 30,000 refugees and asylum seekers, and half of them are children from Somalia, Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Yemen. And on top of the refugees, there's more than 100,000 migrants, mainly from Ethiopia, that live in the country. And this increases the need of humanitarian assistance in the country.
She said the UN's Emergency Response Fund has allocated some $4 million this year for food and medical supplies to affected communities in Djibouti.
This funding had a tremendous impact on the lives of people who needed it the most. And that's why I call on the international community to keep supporting the humanitarian response in Djibouti.
During our visit, the Deputy Humanitarian Chief will see firsthand the efforts undertaken by aid agencies and the Djibouti government to respond to increasing challenges, including the growing number of refugees and migrants. Harsh weather conditions coupled with high levels of poverty have left more than 280,000 people in chronic levels of food insecurity in Djibouti. Mueller detailed the challenges.
Djibouti provides a clear example of the urgency to take immediate action to confront the climate crisis and to protect the most vulnerable. The country is extremely vulnerable to climate change, with large areas of the territory exposed to extreme weather conditions, be it drought, flooding, and the humanitarian impact of the extreme weather events and the climate crisis is very visible in Djibouti.
Conflict, insecurity and extreme hardship in neighboring Somalia, Ethiopia, Eritrea and Yemen have driven refugees and migrants into the country. The UN official's mission comes just a few days after a similar visit to Eritrea. She plans to meet with drought-affected victims, senior government officials, and representatives from the diplomatic community and humanitarian organizations. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
The International Organization for Migration says migrant fatalities on the Mediterranean Sea separating Africa from Europe will top 1,000 this year. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The numbers indicate the Mediterranean Sea crossing remains the deadliest known migration route worldwide. International Organization for Migration figures show 994 men, women, and children making the perilous journey have died this year. With 3 months left, IOM says the final 2019 death toll is certain to exceed 1,000. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says this will mark the sixth straight year that deaths on the Mediterranean have topped 1,000. The cumulative toll of victims during the six-year period is at least 15,000.
These data, tragic as they are the lowest number recorded at this point in the year since 2014. However, as shown, this drop is linked mostly to the reduction in the number of people attempting the crossing rather than an improvement on the safety of this route, indicating that safe alternatives are urgently needed for migrants seeking a better life.
The UN Migration Agency blames many of the deaths on rising anti-migrant sentiments and hardening attitudes towards people fleeing violence and poverty. Figures in IOM's Missing Migrants Project report show other parts of the world also are becoming increasingly deadly for migrants. The agency has recorded nearly 600 deaths along migratory corridors in the Americas. The agency says it expects many more Central American migrants heading for the United States are likely to lose their lives before the end of the year. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These data, tragic as they are the lowest number recorded at this point.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings, every weekday at 1500 Universal. We'll be right back.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.